They call them central banks for a reason, you know. What the ECB, the European Central Bank, did today and what that says about the U.S. of A. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday, the 10th of March. Great, as always, to have you here, everybody. I know that I talk about Fed Chair Janet Yellen a good deal on this program, which, in my defense, makes sense because she and her colleagues at the Fed basically run the American economy, right? Coming in a close second, though, is a guy by the name of Mario Draghi, who, along with his colleagues at the European Central Bank, and no, the analogy is not perfect here, but they do hold sway over that economy. All of which is by way of saying that there's an interesting thing happening at the highest levels of macroeconomics. With the mindset at the Fed here toward raising interest rates, this morning Mr. Draghi and the ECB cut every interest rate they have, said they're going to buy more bonds as well. Quantitative easing is what that's called, if you remember. And they're doing it all in the hopes of improving Europe's economy by encouraging banks to lend money. Marketplace's Mark Garrison gets us going with this transatlantic policy disparity.
The difference in thinking between European and American bankers is kind of like the difference between European and American films. Europeans have a dark view. Consider some of their greatest movies. In Breathless, the hot young romance ends tragically. Bicycle Thieves, dad never finds the bike. In La Dolce Vita, even the orgy is really sad. Right now, Europe's central bankers definitely do not see their economy headed for a Hollywood ending.
Europe has not recovered as well as the U.S. has from the crisis and the recession, and so European monetary policy needs to be more aggressive.
Former Fed economist Ann Owen is a professor at Hamilton College. It's not that all's well for America's economy, but the numbers in Frankfurt paint a far dimmer picture than those in Washington. Carrie Leahy is senior advisor at Decision Economics.
Over the last 3 years, the economy has been growing at about a 2.5% annual pace. That is in big contradiction to Europe. Europe's growth rates have been anemic for quite some time now, and they also are looking at a greater possibility of deflation.
Deflation is bad for people, companies, governments, everyone. Unlike Europe, America is close to a level of inflation considered healthy. Other than prices, the other big thing central bankers worry about is jobs. Beth Ann Bovino is U.S. Chief Economist for Standard & Poor's.
Look at the U.S. again. The unemployment rate is now half of where it was during the recession, whereas the Eurozone, the unemployment rate is much, much higher.
Add all that up, and that's why you have Europe taking serious measures to keep things from getting worse. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is in Washington today, the first such visit in 20 years. There was the greeting on the lawn of the White House, a joint press conference with President Obama, and a pledge by the two countries to collaborate on cutting emissions, not just CO2, but also the potent greenhouse gas methane, basically natural gas. It's a pretty big change by what you could argue were just a couple of years ago two of the biggest laggards in the world on climate change. From the Sustainability Desk, Marketplace's Scott Tong has that one.
By one estimate, 25% of today's warming doesn't come from carbon dioxide. It comes from methane. Methane doesn't live in the atmosphere as long, but in the short term, it's 80 times worse. Methane leaks out during oil and gas drilling and storage and transport. How much? Well, Mark Brownstein at the Environmental Defense Fund has done studies with industry, including one in North Texas.
Measured emissions were 90% higher than what was otherwise reported in the official inventory. This is a problem much bigger than either government or industry has been thinking.
Many companies are addressing this, including Norway's Statoil. Last month, the company's Nate Teddy told an industry conference at IHS CERAWeek that they watch methane leaks because they're dangerous and they're costly.
Our number one priority is keeping our workers safe, but we also look at this as a cost issue. We can apply cost-effective solutions.
But there are thousands of drillers, and a couple bad leakers can really add up. So the EPA will now draft regulations, and industry has already complained. What's really at stake here? Well, in part, the promise of natural gas. It is a fossil fuel, but it's also cleaner than coal. That is, if gas drillers can control their methane leaks. Rob Jackson is an environmental scientist at Stanford.
Natural gas can be an important lever to take dirty coal plants offline. The benefits for that include greenhouse gases and pollutants that kill people.
The U.S. and Canada aim to cut their methane leaks by 40% in a decade. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
You know how when you're driving through certain parts of the country at certain times of the year, your car basically gets a thick coating of bug remains on it? Annoying for drivers, yes. For airlines, bug splat is an economic problem, which helps explain why NASA is developing a bug splat remedy. Gigi Duban has more.
You're driving down the highway, minding your own business, when all of a sudden your windshield is covered with bugs and bug guts. All through April and May, millions of love bugs descend on the Southeast.
We love it. It's awesome.
That's Rusty Prothrow. He owns Waterworks Car Wash in Panama City, Florida. Those bugs?
It's like flying money for us. Money with wings.
For airlines, it's more like money flying away. Airplane wings are designed to have really efficient aerodynamics. But during takeoff and landing, bugs can cover the wings.
And so then, the benefits for aerodynamics that you designed the plane for, you lose some of that benefit.
Mia Siochi is a materials engineer at NASA. She's working on a coating similar to Teflon, where dead bugs, essentially flying balls of liquid, roll right off the surface, sort of the way water balls up in a nonstick pan. Airlines are interested because better aerodynamics means less fuel burn, 3 to 5% less, she says.
If you're talking about an airline spending millions of dollars in fuel, then that's a lot.
So while this new coating wouldn't prevent more bug casualties, Siochi says there is an environmental benefit. Less drag means less carbon emissions. Air travel produces 2% of all global emissions, and as more people fly, that's growing. I'm Gigi Duban for Marketplace.
You know what traders thought of that big European Central Bank move today? Yeah, no, me neither. The major indices finished unchanged. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Forget Beijing or Shanghai or Mexico City. The World Health Organization says Delhi, India is the most polluted city on the planet. And when things get as bad as they are in Delhi, it becomes a public health emergency, too. So there's a campaign there to get rid of one primary cause of all that dirty air. The BBC's Yogita Lamai filed this report from Delhi.
God's love, it's so wonderful, God's love.
It's nearly bedtime at the Mahajan household, and 5-year-old Kyra's parents are getting her to say a prayer she's been taught at school. But before she goes off to sleep, she has to take a medicine to treat the severe cough she's been suffering from. It's not your regular medicine. Kyra has to wear a mask attached to a machine that vaporizes the drugs so that they can be released directly into her lungs. And she has to do this for 15 minutes twice a day.
And the fear was a regular restrictive.
Over the hum of the machine, her father reads to her to keep her mind off the ordeal that's become all too frequent. Kyra has the cough every 3 months.
The main reason doctor puts this on is because of the pollution in the air.
Kyra's mother, Anumegha, tells me she thinks the problem is getting worse.
The pollution level seems to be rising. So with every passing year, the intensity of the cough has gone up. The medications have become stronger. To have a problem which you cannot tackle personally, it's all the more disturbing because I really can't do much to control it.
Delhi's air is the worst in the world, according to the WHO or the World Health Organization. And the pollution is often visible. Usually, when the sun rises and sets, a cloud of smog hangs over the city. At a major road junction in Delhi, a traffic jam extends till where I can see. I can smell the smoke in the air, and as I breathe in, the back of my throat feels a little bit scratchy. Now, pollution in this city at its peak can be 25 times more toxic than the safe level set by the World Health Organization. And while there are different sources of pollution here, scientific studies have shown that 45% of the most harmful pollutants come from car emissions. And that's not the only reason they're so dangerous, says Anumita Roy Chaudhary from Centre for Science and Environment.
You know, from public health standpoint, what matters most is your proximity to the source of pollution. City may have many sources of pollution, but on a daily basis, what you're most exposed to is the toxic fume coming out from the tailpipes of vehicles when you're on the road and when you live close to the roadside. Studies have shown that in Delhi, at least 55 to 60% of Delhi's 17 million people live within 500 meters from roadside, which is under the direct influence zone of vehicular pollution.
The government has been trying to put curbs on the use of cars in the city, but public transport is insufficient.
This station is Rajiv Chowk. Change here for Yellow Line and Red Line.
More trains have been promised, and Delhi Minister Satendra Jain tells me they're working furiously to build transport infrastructure.
In 1 year, 60% of Delhi will live within half a kilometer of a metro station. And in the next 3 years, we really expect to expand public transport more substantially. But we also need a change in people's mindset. We don't expect that all car users will use alternatives like the metro or buses.
It's only recently begun to sink in that a crisis is hanging over this city and its people. And it has no instant solution.
The BBC's Yogita Lamai in Delhi for us. I had a conversation while I was in Washington last week with a guy by the name of Stu Trevelyan. He runs a company called NGP Van, which provides voter data services to Democratic and progressive candidates and causes. There are at least two sides to every political coin, though, so we called a guy by the name of Jim Gilliam to see if he would be interested in talking. He's the founder and CEO of a company called Nation Builder, which, although it's a nonpartisan firm, does do work with Republican candidates, Rick Santorum and Donald Trump among them. Jim, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
What is it that Nation Builder does exactly?
So Nation Builder is more of a mission than it is a company. Humanity has so many problems we have to fix, right? And the world is changing so rapidly. And so at the very moment when we need more leaders than ever, we have this basically a historic crisis of leadership. Like Congress doesn't work. You know, just you can evidence the presidential campaigns are a bit of a disaster. And so our mission is to go and find more leaders, create more leaders. And so we provide a variety of software products that help sort of break down all of the barriers that get in the way of someone becoming a leader.
You are not a data and numbers guy. You started as a documentary filmmaker, right?
I started as an internet geek. I'm a big hardcore internet geek, and I am. I got really involved in documentaries because I saw stories as a way to change the culture, and I was really upset about the lead up to the Iraq War and whatnot in the early 2000s. Yeah.
And then how do you come from documentary films to services like yours and the political arena?
So what I learned in making the documentaries was a lot about political organizing. We kind of hacked the concepts of like volunteers hosting screenings as a way to get the word out about films that like the traditional media like wasn't covering.
Yeah.
So I was really inspired by things like the Howard Dean movement early on, folks like that. I was like, hey, you know, Move On. I was really involved with Move On early on in the 2003 time period. As you know, Obama became elected, and I sort of started to think about what was really next. I started to play with the ideas of what would it be like to bring democracy to democracy itself.
You are speaking in very noble terms, and yet the political environment that we exist in today specifically is very down and dirty. Does that trouble you at all?
I think we're seeing like a massive evaporation of power, where because so many more people can be involved and like have a say, that we're in a phase of chaos. It's playing out just spectacularly in the presidential campaign right now. The people that are like at the top of the polls and that are winning the elections were people that no one thought would ever have a chance even 6 months ago, right? That is an unbelievable transition, right, for this country to go through. And it is not going to be pretty, but it is like essential to our future.
Is it a business opportunity for you?
This is one of the greatest opportunities of all time, right, to find and create more leaders to, like, at the very moment when all of power is, like, evaporating before our eyes, be like, hey, you know what? We can throw our hands up in the air and we can be like, this is a complete disaster. What are we going to do? We're totally screwed. Or you can say, you know what? I can get involved. I can actually make something happen. I can go beyond just voting. I can run for office, or I can find the 50 or 1,000 or a million other people who care about this thing, and I can just go and make it happen.
Okay, so you're a guy who, based on his past history that you just described with Move On and Howard Dean, seems to be leaning toward the more progressive side of the political spectrum, at least on a personal basis. And yet here you have Donald Trump using your services. How would you feel personally if Donald Trump is elected?
I disagree with pretty much all of our customers. That's the whole point. That's what makes democracy great.
But you're just selling them to them. It's a business.
It's a mission to make democracy great again.
Jim Gilliam, Nation Builder is the name of the company. Jim, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Coming up.
Yeah, it's a little bit like that scene in Fight Club where everybody knows who's in Fight Club and they just sort of look at each other and they're like, oh yeah.
The first rule of karaoke is don't talk about karaoke. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials barely budged today, added just 5 points, 16,995. The NASDAQ took home 0.25%, 12 points, finished at 4662. The S&P 500 flat right where it started in 1989. Technology stocks lost their grip a little bit today. Twitter took a 6% hit on reports that it's upping stock packages to employees to help keep them around. Yahoo unloaded 2%. eBay traded down 1%. Facebook forfeited about a 10%. Ulta Salon Cosmetics proved the beauty business is pretty indeed. Shares up more than 10% today after the bell thanks to a strong earnings report. Dollar General rang up 10% in regular trading. Its earnings look pretty good as well. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note rose to 1.93%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The trailer for the new Captain America movie dropped today. Quick spoiler alert here. Spider-Man, check it out. You'll see. But forget about comic books on the big screen. What about comics on the very, very small screen? From Oregon Public Broadcasting, April Baer reports.
Sales of digital comics in 2014 topped $100 million, about the time Amazon acquired the main online sales hub, Comixology. But seriously, have you ever tried reading a digital comic book? Former Dark Horse Comics editor Jim Gibbons notes it's not bad if you download to a tablet.
The iPad screen is comparable enough to a comic book page, I think. You can read the whole page like you would if it was in a book in front of you, and then you swipe to the left, you get to the next page, whole page is there.
But just try to do the same comic on your smartphone. That full page with all its panels can be hard to take in.
What we wanted to do is say, okay, let's not try and cram a comic book page onto a phone screen and make it work. Let's make comics that are built specifically for the size of the phone screen.
Gibbons has signed on as senior editor for a new mobile venture called Stila Comics. The company is developing brand new titles written and drawn to be read on a smartphone. On the beta version, it's compact. You read one panel, move down, read another, down some more. It's not hard to imagine whipping the phone out one-handed in the grocery line, reading a few pages. And it's the perfect size for sneaking in an undercover read after bedtime, just like you used to. Apps like this have taken off in Asia. One of them, known in the U.S. as Line Webtoon, has 30 million monthly users. I decided to take Stila for a test drive in a tough room.
Thank you so much.
Jason Levian is the owner of Floating World Comics, a shop in northwest Portland that describes itself as a store for people who still like going to stores. He scrolled through a Stila sword and sorcery epic titled Inheritance.
I'd say this format is definitely better, but there's still something about it, like the screen is small. You don't see the full page. Somehow I just lose interest. I don't know what it is.
Levian adds there's one thing he already likes about Stila, its business model. The company is offering its artists and writers upfront page rates that are competitive with bigger publishers.
Any new publishing company out there that's offering to pay artists a good page rate upfront is a good thing, no matter what format.
Stila is also offering artists and writers a profit split on the back end. Gibbons is hiring both mobile native artists and some widely read print talent. People like this guy, Michael Avon Oeming. He's done some writing for Marvel titles like Thor, but is best known among comics readers for indie titles like Powers, a mashup of superhero narrative with police procedural.
I've always been interested on a personal level of, you know, how do you get comics into more people's hands? You know, I remember early on looking at the Archie books at the checkout counters, and I was like, why aren't other comic books here?
Oeming is young enough that he's on Tumblr, but old enough to remember the first generation of digital comics. The internet was new, and everyone was scrambling.
We weren't too concerned at that time about screen size because everybody just had a big, giant, square screen.
Overall, comics haven't changed much till now. Oeming says he's excited about Steela's concept. For consumers, the service will deliver about 8 fresh pages every weekday. That'll cost $4.99 a month for starters, with the hope you'll be hooked. In Portland, I'm April Baer for Marketplace.
We're getting toward the end of the week, so you might be thinking about meeting up with some colleagues after work for a little singing, by which I mean karaoke. There are, however, some rules to live by karaoke-wise that you would be well served to follow. Sam Grobart wrote about the 10 commandments of karaoke with colleagues. It's up on Bloomberg right now. Sam, it's good to have you on.
Good to be here.
All right. Why karaoke, man? Why not like bowling or, I don't know, anything other than karaoke?
I think karaoke offers something that a lot of other activities don't, which is sort of mutually assured humiliation. And that really helps bind people together.
Yeah, because in all seriousness, it's a team building thing, right? I mean, that's why your boss takes you to karaoke.
Exactly. A lot of people who maybe haven't done a lot of karaoke get afraid. They think, oh, gosh, I have to stand up there and sing in front of everybody else. But in fact, a really good karaoke night is when the whole room is singing along, and then you get a really nice group effect.
All right. Well, so we need to then go down this list of rules you have. Number one, with a bullet, is everybody should have like a beer or two.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm going out with my hardcore karaoke friends, we're going straight to the karaoke bar because we are not wasting a moment. However, not everybody has that same level of enthusiasm from the get-go, so you have to kind of liquor them up a little bit to then get the idea in.
Rule number two, song choice is crucial.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, here you want to go, again, with sort of a crowd-pleasing hit. You don't want to go too obscure. You don't want to go with something that's hard to sing. I'm a big fan of We Built This City on Rock and Roll by Starship.
Yep.
Pretty much anything by Starship works really well.
Yep. When you go karaokeing, and I guess I'm asking you in your professional capacity and in your personal capacity, do you go to a place with a stage where you stand up in front of people? Do you go to a smaller karaoke room where you all sit on like couches against the wall? What do you do?
Pros and cons for both, Kai. The rooms where there's one stage can be really fun because you can get a big crowd going. Mm-hmm. And if you're comfortable with that, it's really exciting. The rooms are also great, though, because you're with your friends and you don't have to wait for your songs. Mm. They're all your songs. It's your room.
That's right. Next day at the office, you say just nod and move on. Let's not delve too deeply into the karaoke-isms.
Yeah, it's a little bit like that scene in Fight Club where everybody knows who's in Fight Club and they just sort of look at each other and they're like, oh, yeah. I like to take that approach the day after.
Is it your experience that karaoke is rising in popularity?
I anecdotally feel like it is. I feel like I keep encountering other people who are closet karaokeers, and then we get together and then it turns into a bigger group and you hear about other groups that are getting together at other bars. And so there's something about it, I think, that everybody just really likes to sort of play the fool.
Sam Grobart, he writes in Bloomberg Business Week about how to karaoke with your coworkers. There are some rules, people. Sam, thanks very much.
Thank you.
We've got Sam's full list of karaoke do's and don'ts, which for me, by the way, are all don'ts, every single one of them. It's at marketplace.org. Yeah, that's Bridget trying to get me to sing with that bridge. That's what that was. All right, this final note on the way out today. I was talking yesterday to Molly Wood about that computer that beat the world's best Go player, one of the most complicated board games in the world. And I was joking about how I was ready for my robot overlords. Well, yeah, about that. The computer won again today. The human who got beat, Lee Sedol is his name. He said, and this is a quote, I really feel that AlphaGo, that's the name of the computer, I really feel that AlphaGo played a near-perfect game. End of quote. Robot overlords, y'all. Robot overlords. A lot of ups and downs on Wall Street today. At the end, Bupkis, the Dow added less than a 0.1%, 5 points. The NASDAQ took home a 0.25%. That is 12 points. S&P 500, flat. John Buckley, Deirdre Debke, Eve Epstein, Nancy Fargali, George Judson, Dave Shaw, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. Our managing editor is Mark Miller. I'm Kai Ryssdal. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APN.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.